This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon. Joining us in about 30 minutes' time, he's the NHL analyst at Forbes Sports Money. Mike Colligan is going to join us, frequent guest on this fine program. As I'm sure you're well aware, the Forbes came out with their list of the most valuable NHL franchises earlier this week. We're going to talk to Mike about that list and about their methodology and everything associated with that yearly study produced by Forbes Sports Money. 1 p.m. this afternoon, 1 hour from now. Ray Ferraro, he's a hockey analyst, TSN's hockey analyst. You know him as the color guy on most of the TSN broadcasts, is going to join us to talk about, we're just going to go around the league with Ray. First time guest here on this fine program, so we're going to talk to Ray in about an hour's time. And then at about 1:15, James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen is going to join us. Daniel Alfredson makes his return to the nation's capital, playing his first game in Ottawa in his career. That when he's not wearing an Ottawa Senators jersey. So we'll talk to James Gordon about that. That game taking place tomorrow evening on TSN, of course. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Facebook.com/Illegal Curve is our Facebook page. And the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Before we get into last night's Jets, or yesterday morning's Jets Flyers game, to be more precise, I say good afternoon to both Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, boys. We have some hockey to talk about here. 3 Jets games in the books since last Saturday's show. Lots of other NHL news to talk about. So, as always, I'm happy to be here. It's the last day of November. I know Richie is basically itching right now, literally itching his mustache to get that mustache off because, as I said, it's the last day. We've raised a lot of money. I think we're going to have that grand total. It's really good. And so this day concludes Movember, I should say. It's been lots of fun.
It also concludes November, right? If you're not growing a mustache, yep. But you're right about that. Richie, good afternoon.
Hi, boys.
How you doing? Ready?
Oh, boy.
Getting off to a punchy start already?
Yeah, I'm just happy I was able to talk. Yeah. Two of you hogging the mic for the first 3 minutes of the show. Ready to roll here. Let's go.
Ready to roll. Okay, let's get started with yesterday afternoon's Jets Flyers game. A 2-1 defeat that the Jets handled at the hands of the Philadelphia Flyers. You know, what jumps out to me about this game, and I'll let you guys talk about it. On Thursday, the Jets practiced, and Claude Noel did not like what he saw from the team. Mm-hmm. He blew practice dead, and he criticized the team for their lackadaisical effort. Sounds like we weren't there, obviously, but it sounds like then Andrew Ladd sort of got into it, and not necessarily in a negative way, but he got into it with Noel saying, look, we got your point, stop harping on it. Then yesterday, the Jets go out and they play the first 40 minutes like they were sound asleep.
It's unfortunate, guys, because we know that they got off to a great start on this road trip, this 6-game road trip, and it's a big road trip for the Jets. They left on this road trip, this 2-week road trip, coming off of a shootout loss to the Minnesota Wild, where I think we all agreed they played pretty well and that game could have gone either way, but they only got 1 point, Richie. Mm-hmm. And they were able to get the wins against the Devils and the Islanders and keep the games low scoring and come out with 4 of 4 points. And then they came out there in the morning game. And again, the fact that this game was in the morning doesn't matter. You can have the game, Richie, at 7 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon, or 7 o'clock at night. Both teams have to play that game.
That's right.
So I don't want to hear any of this nonsense about, well, it was the morning and all of this and all of that. And I realize it's our job in the media to ask these questions to these guys. And they were saying, and they even mentioned this on TSN Jets during the broadcast, that, you know, okay, you don't get to have your nap and maybe your meal changes a little bit.
Oh, boy.
What? You know, but the fact is, guys, they came out there, and you mentioned Andrew Ladd, and he was interviewed on TSN Jets, and he said that, you know, we've been awful in the first period, and after the second period, Mark Stewart came on and said we weren't that much better. In the third period, I thought the Jets started to come on, and obviously Michael Frolik got that goal to make it interesting towards the end, But on that first goal, I mean, it wasn't just Dustin Byfuglien. The pass comes to Blake Wheeler, Richie, on the boards, and it hits his skate, and then Olli Jokinen doesn't react quick enough, and then Scotty Hartnell comes in, and right there, you're off to a bad start, one goal, and the game isn't even a minute old. And it wasn't much better in the second. And for me, too, a big problem in that game, guys, was penalties. And one of the keys to this game, Richie, the Flyers, heading into that game, had lost two in a row. Even though the Flyers have been really good in the last 2 weeks, mm-hmm. the Flyers had scored a power play goal in 8 straight games. And then you have Olli Jokinen taking that interference penalty in the first period. Then Olli Jokinen flips the puck, gets the delay of game penalty later in the first period. They took way too many penalties. They didn't get hurt on it. In fact, Couturier had 2 shorthanded chances. He could have scored a goal in the first period when Klitsam bobbled the puck. The Jets overall, Richie, in that game were just not sharp. And again, I think we should give them credit because they've played better defensively on this road trip. They've only given up, five goals in 3 games.
I'll tell you what.
But in this game, they didn't show up.
They played 2 awful teams and they beat them. And they played a better team and they lost. Well, I'll simplify it for you. The Islanders' defense is horrid. The Devils are garbage. I mean, the Devils play in the Eastern Conference, fine. Jaromir Jagr, Hall of Famer, first ballot, no question, leading the team in points.
Yeah,
Playing great.
He just passed Steve Yzerman on the all-time scoring list.
Name 4 defensemen on the team. Most people can't because, you know, who cares about the Devils?
Right.
They got Marty Brodeur playing. They got, you know, they're playing a bunch of... Marty Brodeur is playing over Schneider, fine item, no issue with that, even though we'll talk about it later in the show. Play 2 bad teams. Go and play Philly, better team, they lose. This is what I thought was interesting from Coach Claude Noel. There has to be a point here, this is quoting him, there has to be a point here where the players get engaged among themselves, Noel said.
Where it's not, where Claude doesn't have to be the one who motivates them.
And what does that mean? You just said what it means, but what does it mean at a macro level?
There's no accountability.
Leadership. And leadership to a point, and accountability, as you mentioned, Drew. I'll continue. The question is, how do you get it on track? You try to do different things, but yelling and screaming doesn't do you a whole lot of good. You can pound your drum all you want, but it gets old. Basically, what Noel's saying there is, hey, where are my leaders? Hey, where's the accountability in the room? At some point, you guys have to pick it up and do it. And you can take your issue with Claude Noel all you want. I mean, this team on paper, nothing special. But I actually, to be honest with you, I'm happy Noel comes out and says this. Because when a coach comes out in the media and says something, and he says quite a bit to the media, but when a coach comes out and says something like this in the media, it's pointed. There's a reason for it. That means in the room, ain't getting through. And then you could say, one side you could say, well, Claude Noel's a problem then because his message isn't getting through. On the other hand, you could say, hey, maybe some of the players are the problem. And on the other hand, and if you have 3 hands, you know what else you say? This team doesn't have enough talent, and the general manager has not given him enough of a fair shot. And I think there's some validity at all 3 of those points.
I have no problem with Claude Noel calling the players out for having a poor practice, but you know you talk about leadership
and a game.
I thought one of the best. You know, you talk about leadership and the guys that wear the C and the A. I thought Andrew Ladd was one of the best forwards yesterday. I thought Mark Stewart was one of the best defensemen. I think since Mark Stewart has come back, he's been excellent.
But let me ask you this:
he blocks shots. He's tough. And the thing is, it's to me, this is more about calling out the rest of the team.
Let me get in here. I want to ask you. You said Ladd and Stewart. Fine. But at some point, are Ladd and Stewart responsible for the bridge of coach to captain to rest of the players?
Yep.
I don't know. Is it Ladd? I'm asking a question here. Is it Ladd and Stewart's fault that's not getting through? Or are the players just not the right ones?
I think it's a combination of both. But when I look at leading by example, and we've talked about this a lot, and you know, is Andrew Ladd the right captain? I think he is. What more can Andrew Ladd do? I mean, he goes out there. He's scoring at a good pace this year. Yesterday, I thought he was one of the best forwards. I thought Evander Kane was one of the better forwards, but he obviously didn't play in the second or third period, which was unfortunate because he was hit by Braden Coburn there, and he wasn't able to come back. I don't think we know what the injury was. We can assume it's either a leg or a groin. It's a lower body thing, but Rich, there's an absolute problem with the way the team plays, and you know, I look at leadership to a certain degree. It's obviously a situation where the coach has to bridge the gap. Pardon me, the captain has to bridge the gap mm-hmm. between the coaches and the rest of the players. But you know, Mark Stewart, since he's been back, I think he's been excellent. I think him and Keaton Ellerbe were great yesterday, and they were giving them credit on TSN Jets yesterday for how they were playing. Keaton Ellerbe made a great play breaking up a rush by Wayne Simmonds, and I think he's been really good. He's a bottom pairing defenseman, as is Mark Stewart. They do their job. They get the job done in their own zone. If they chip in offensively once in a while, which Mark Stewart did against the Islanders, that's great. But the fact is, guys, they were winners of two games, and they were unable to follow that up with not just a point or 2 points, Richie, a solid effort. I mean, the Jets were the old Jets of earlier on in the season, making the mistakes, Klitsam coughing the puck up on the power play. Bufflin's pass to Enstrom that led to Couturier's goal was just a lazy pass. Uh-huh. You got to be quick on those passes. Quick puck movement is a key for the success of any power play. And the fact that they basically, the thing with the Jets is, I do think they can be a playoff team, but they shoot themselves in the foot way too much. And that's what we saw earlier on in the season. And I thought that the Jets were kind of getting rid of those bad habits, and they reared their ugly head again against the Flyers.
I have to say that I was surprised at the effort the Jets put forth. I thought after it wasn't a blow up, so we're not gonna say that it was more than it was, but after the interaction between Noel and Ladd on Thursday, I thought that this team was going to come into the game sharper. And to me, it really does point to a problem. I don't know where the problem stems from, but that your captain and your coach have this interaction, and the captain pretty much says to the coach, "We got it. We hear what you're saying. Back off now. You've made your point." And then they come out with that effort. It tells me that, Noel was right, and Ladd was wrong in that situation, if you want to break it down to a right versus wrong scenario.
Yeah.
Noel said, and I mean, both of those guys really are the ones who are supposed to have the best pulse on this team.
Right.
And Noel, seems as though he had the better pulse on the team, uh-huh, in saying, you guys aren't ready. You guys beat the Devils and the Islanders. You think you're, superstars all of a sudden. You're going to play a tougher game with a screwed up start time. You're not ready, and I can see it. No,
right.
Ladd said no, right, and looks like Ladd was wrong on that one.
Well, I don't know if Ladd was saying he was wrong. I think he was showing frustration. He was saying, "Okay, we get it." I don't think you can spin that into saying he was wrong. But
the evidence shows that they didn't get it.
Well, I'm the team didn't get it.
I'm not saying Ladd himself didn't get it.
This goes back to what Richie said though about this team, because this Jets team, guys, in the third year back, and they're trying to make the playoffs. This isn't a team this year that's just trying to get a little bit better. Well, they are, in the sense that they're trying to make the playoffs. So they want to get in there. This Western Conference, Richie, is a, mm-hmm, tough conference. You're going to have to beat out a Minnesota Wild, a Phoenix Coyotes, maybe a Colorado Avalanche to get into the playoffs. And so you need every point. And we're 27 games into the season right now. And you can't have that type of effort where you're basically defeating yourselves. And that goes back to what Richie's asking. Well, is it the captain, the assistant captain, or is it the rest of the team that's not getting it? And at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. Because it is the team that needs to get it. It's everybody. It's Olli Jokinen, it's Blake Wheeler, it's Klitsam. These guys that were basically not really focused and engaged in the game. I mean, these Grant Klitsam, I don't want to throw him under the bus here, but in that first period, he goes back to get the puck at the blue line on the power play, and the puck just goes by him. Sean Couturier skates right by him. It so happens that Andre Pavlik makes an unbelievable save and keeps the game low scoring. I mean, guys, it could have been 3-0 Flyers after that first period. The game's over after the first period, which it kind of already was. Couturier gets the goal in the second period. But the fact is, these bad mistakes where you're beating yourselves, you don't give yourself a chance to win. The Jets can beat the Flyers. They already beat the Flyers this year.
Can't argue with you. When we come back, we'll talk about the week ahead for the Winnipeg Jets. It's an easy schedule. You're listening to NHL Midweek. Pardon me, this isn't NHL Midweek. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province.
Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada, with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association at cga-manitoba.org.
Come on, Drew.
Sorry, I'm stumbling over my words. Certified General Accountants, we see more than numbers.
And we appreciate CGA continuing to sponsor us. Speaking of income earners, Mr. Richard Pollock, I think he's going to win top Movember earner for Legal Curve. We're almost at $3,000 now. That's incredible.
It's very incredible.
I mean, we are so happy. All of the people that have donated to us, we've got one day left here. So if you want to donate
actually technically donate till December 9th, but I think it's only fair
right.
to
say. Yeah, so that's today. Right. You can donate to Movember, I believe, all year round, but really it's November and early December. But, you know, it's a great cause, and we are really, I mean, there's people that we don't really even know that are donating to us. And it's just incredible the amount of support we're getting. It's incredible. We're going to be involved with it again next year. Richie's got one of the best stashes, I think, in the entire city of Winnipeg right now. And he's being rewarded with top income earner for Movember.
Congratulations. We'll talk more about Movember a little bit later on in the show when we break down the we'll do a breakdown, a wrap-up of Movember, as you were.
See, Richie, Drew's just waiting for Beard-cember.
Yeah,
he didn't
right.
do Movember this year because he wants to do the Beard-cember.
But Beard-cember, in any event, I mean, Drew already has a beard, so he's cheating. You have to shave it off, Drew.
Nah, I'm not going to shave.
Well, what Drew did is he shaved his chest instead of shaving his...
Let's talk about the Jets week ahead.
Yeah, I'd rather talk about shaving your chest than the Jets.
I don't think anybody wants to hear
one,
that.
One word, Nair.
Monday, the Jets play at the New York Rangers, Thursday at the Florida Panthers, and then next Saturday at the Tampa Bay Lightning. You look at the schedule, I mean, we knew that this was an easy six-game trip.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that this was not a very difficult six-game trip, and at the start of it, we would have said, you know, they had to go 5-1, especially given...
You said 4-1-1, you said.
4-1-1, yeah. Okay, but I mean, at this point, they've used up their one. So you got to have a 2-0-1 week, or it's even if you go 2-1 in these next three games and you go 4-2, it's not successful enough. You've dug yourself such a hole at the beginning of this year that 4-2 just isn't going to cut it. I mean, you know, in a normal six game window, you can say 4-2, that's not too bad, but it's not enough anymore.
Right,
I mean, and especially against lesser competition.
Right, and the Philadelphia game's disappointing, but that one is a game, Richie, that you have to put in the rearview mirror. You've got the Rangers coming up. The Jets haven't been really good at Madison Square Garden. And I said this on the NHL Midweek Show. I still think the Flyers can be a playoff team. I still think the Rangers are a playoff team. Now they're in eighth in the Eastern Conference right now, Richie. The Eastern Conference is terrible.
Oh, it's awful.
It's unbelievable how bad it is right now. And you look at Toronto, and I know we're going to talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs later on in the show, but you've got the Capitals a couple points ahead of the Rangers. The Capitals aren't exactly Stanley Cup contenders this year. So I look at the Rangers, and I still see a team that's hard to beat. Last night, Rick Nash is back now. He's only played 10 games.
Yeah.
Rick Nash got a beautiful goal. So, I mean, you've still got a lot of talent on that Rangers team. You've still got one of the best goaltenders.
Uh-huh.
So, to me, this is the hardest game. I think this game is harder than the Tampa game. To me, this is the game. If you can go into MSG, coming off of the loss to the Philadelphia Flyers, you can keep that game low scoring. And the Rangers, by the way, guys, are one of the lowest scoring teams in the Eastern Conference. They've only got more goals than Buffalo and Philadelphia. So the Rangers aren't exactly an offensive superpower, but defensively, you've still got that same group of defensemen that are really good, and this is a game where you have to stay out of the penalty box, you have to be smart, you can't turn over the puck like you did. And to me, again, going back to the first segment, Richie, that's why, you know, the Jets are going to be in a dogfight to make it in the Western Conference, but to me, you've just got to be smart in your own zone and with your puck movement. And to me, that was the game right there. Coughing the puck up, Bufflin twice, and Wheeler, you know, you throw him in there. It's not all Bufflin. You got to be smarter. A team like the Rangers will kill you. They can kill you on turnovers.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. I mean, you're looking at the Florida Swing and the Panthers, obviously a rebuilding squad, and you're looking at Tampa without Stamkos I think a lack of talent there overall. And then you look at the Rangers, a team that has talent but hasn't really put it together yet. And for Vigneault, it's, you know, you're certainly helped by, you know, if you compare Tortorella and Vigneault, who are of course playing at 1 o'clock today, you have Tortorella's got the pressure on all year because of how good the West is. And in the East, as you mentioned, you know, the Rangers are sitting fine. They're third in the Metropolitan Division, not even subject right now to a crossover. And they haven't played well at all. I mean, they're 26 points in 26 games. They're exactly 13 wins and 13 losses. They haven't gone to no overtime losses. And, you know, they're 2 points out of second and 7 points, 9 points, excuse me, out of first. So, with a game in hand. So, for Vino, he can get an idea of what the pulse of his team. He can see who he likes, who he doesn't like. And obviously, Zelzato is somebody he doesn't like. And they can kind of take it easy. Nash is back. They're getting a little healthier now. So, that'll be helpful.
The Rangers, you know, just hearing you talk about the Rangers again, I mean, this is a team that's played 17 games on the road and 9 at home, right? Because of those renovations to Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. So, sorry to interrupt you, Richie, but I mean, this is a team to me that's primed. I'm not saying the Rangers are going to be, you know, a first or second seed in the East, but to me, they're a playoff team, and they're a team probably, with the exception of maybe the Flyers, is one of the most underachieving teams right now, because and Ottawa. You could throw Ottawa in there. We're going to talk to James Gordon about that. I don't think anybody was expecting Ottawa to be in 12th in the East at this point. But I think your point is well taken. They're not exactly lighting it up right now. And so this is a team that the Jets match up well against.
So and you look more down at the Florida swing, and those are teams that you should be able to, if you get leads on them, you know, it's they're teams that don't have a ton of offensive talent. And so you should be able to take advantage of it in terms of the talent level that you have. But this Jets squad, I mean, they have to kind of, you know, going back to last segment, can you show some focus? Can you show a consistent effort and some heart? And there's enough about this and that. This is about what's inside this team. And there's a lot of passengers. Like Devin said, Gucci, that guy's a passenger, man. What do you see out of him that you like?
Nothing. Nothing that's overwhelming.
He's
a difference maker.
He's been a passenger.
Well, you know? I mean, there's a reason.
I can pick other guys who've been passengers. We haven't talked a lot about Devin Sedigutu. Devin Sedigutu's been a passenger. And you need to pump it up. And enough of the excuses. I see a lot of the post-game comments. And what I worry about is, as an observer is it's becoming, you know, they say losing is contagious. Well, at some point, you just kind of accept it and just kind of go along with it, as opposed to being so displeased with the results.
Sure. It becomes your way of life. It becomes what you know.
And they talk about Atlanta, which I think is the biggest cop-out, is the Atlanta, getting rid of the Atlanta stuff. It's been years now. I mean, get over that. And winning changes that, and you have a fair shot of winning here, just as you do anywhere else. Doesn't matter. This week ahead, I agree with you guys, both of you. You need to run the table here. Not try. You need to run the table.
You need to run the table. There's no excuse.
You're 6 points back in Minnesota for the fourth spot. Minnesota's got a game in hand. Okay? So you're going to come back. You're going through an easy stretch of the schedule right now. Nashville's in the middle of those two. They have two games in hand. So it is, you know, Rick's been doing it. Rick Ralph's been doing the math and what's going to take. And it's going to be tough. So I don't want to go into that now.
Right. You got to focus on this next little stretch. So you're talking about the three road games, Richie, the New York game, the Florida game, and then the three home games that are coming up. Because those three home games that follow the road trip, you're talking about Blues, Avalanche, and Stars. Those games aren't easy.
Nope.
And we know that the Jets have struggled against both the Blues and the Avalanche. Dallas, not so much. But more so the Blues and the Avalanche. So right now, and you don't want to start looking ahead to January and February and how many points they're out. But right now, because we know it's bad, right? We know it's going to be tough. So you have to win two of these three games to put yourself in a situation where you come home and you're able to play the Blues, the Avalanche, and the Stars and still be in the playoff race.
We're 28 games
in there now. We're not even at the quarter pole. We're getting close to the midway point of the season because we've had so many games in this Olympic year. So you've got to come out with an awesome effort against the Rangers in their building. And the Rangers right now are in a dogfight, and they're playing better. They're getting healthier. We mentioned Rick Nash, and you mentioned Michael Delzato, top defenseman for them that are struggling. But if you come out slow, Richie, like you did against the Flyers, the game will be over quickly again.
You're back from this trip with 31 games played.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you got to decide what it is, what you are. You're gonna make them when you come back. You're gonna make a run. You're gonna make a move to make a run, or you're not, and you're possibly gonna dish something off, or you're just gonna sit with the same squad and wait till the deadline. I think we should. I think if I'm a fan of the team, I'd like to have a decision earlier than the deadline in terms of what you want to do here.
Think you get more value, or the earlier you trade a player?
That's very possible.
If that's what you would decide to do, I mean,
Not that there's a lot of tradable assets, which we've got on over the show. I mean, who do you have to trade?
Well, I mean, if you put Devin Setoguchi on the block right now, are you getting a second round pick back in return for him?
At most.
Well,
right?
That's what you traded for.
I know, and you're getting that back at most.
I think you would take that right now. Any questions? And no questions asked.
You probably would, but the point is you know, if you're looking to make a move to change the roster right. As it's currently constructed, guys, and you know, are we thinking that this team's going to make a run to get into the playoffs? No. So the question then is. Is there going to be a change? Not that I'm vouching for that at all, but is there going to be a change in the roster? And if there's a change in the roster, who's it going to be? We've talked about it many times. Mm-hmm. It's going to be Buffon, likely, or Enstrom if somebody takes him on. That's it. Who else are they trading?
But Richie, it goes back to what you're saying,
well,
though, as far as what you think you have this year. If you think you can make a run, then you're making a trade for top six players, top four defensemen. If you think that in early December... you don't have a chance at making the playoffs, then you're starting to move a Setoguchi for draft picks. Then you're starting to look towards the future. And the Jets will know. We talked about this last week. We had this conversation. When do you really know how good your team is? How do you have a good gauge on your team? And it is at the midway point. Because at the quarter pole, the Jets have made it interesting here, guys. The Jets got some wins. They went into Detroit, and they got a win. They beat the Flyers at home. They beat the Sharks at home in the shootout. I mean, they put themselves in a situation to come back. Now, this road trip has the ability to galvanize them, get them back into it, if they keep winning some games. If they come back 3-3 on this road trip, then they're kind of back to where they were before they left for the road trip, right?
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past 12:30 in the afternoon, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN1290, TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's our very good friend. He writes for thehockeywriters.com. He also writes for Forbes Sports Money. Mike Colligan. Mike, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Drew. Thanks for having me.
Mike, obviously Forbes came out with their ranking of the NHL teams and their revenue and what their value is earlier this week, so we have you on to talk about that. You know, according to the study or the report, NHL teams had an average value of $413 million, increased value of 46% over a year ago. Is there a simple answer for this rise in value?
Yeah, really a shocking number when you consider the storyline. I guess a year ago at this point, we were in the middle of the lockout and everyone was saying, what will the long-term hit or impact be of the lost games and fans that were supposedly never going to come back. And now you look at those numbers and it's shocking to see how this is a pretty nice picture for a lot of these owners and for the game of hockey in general. And I think that was a big thing when we were kind of talking owners versus players, the thinking was that an average player that maybe has a career of 5 years couldn't afford to miss a season of hockey and miss the salary that he'd get in one of those seasons. Whereas the ownership, when you now look at the new CBA and the structure of the deal that allows them to only pay out 50% of league revenues to players as opposed to 57% in the prior deal, It's a great system for these owners, and I think that's the biggest changes. Now, when it comes to valuing a team, you want to look at what are the future cash flows that the team can generate for the owners, and that's how you come up with valuation. And when you have a deal that allows the owners to keep more money in their pockets, you're going to see a lot of those rises. And I think when you look at the game in general, lots of new revenue streams with the TV deals, the six outdoor games that they have planned. I mean, this is a league that could really grow quite a bit in the next few seasons here.
Mike, when the Forbes list came out, the new Forbes list came out, a lot of people here in Winnipeg were happy to see that the Winnipeg Jets had gone from a valuation of $170 million to $340 million. That was a big deal. But as far as the Canadian teams as a whole, three of the top five NHL franchises as far as how much they're worth are Canadian. You've got the Toronto Maple Leafs that I think are worth $10 billion now or something like that. But why is it that the Canadian teams continue to be dominant at the top of the valuation of NHL franchises?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, the easy answer is that Canada just is so much more into hockey and more into the NHL than a lot of these NHL cities or American cities are, especially when you're talking about a Florida or a Phoenix or some of these southern U.S. cities. So that's certainly one answer. You've got the diehard fans. And I think in kind of the mid-90s, when you saw the teams that were leaving Canada, you weeded out a lot of those weak links and the teams that maybe weren't making money at that time. You still have a team like Ottawa that's not in great financial straits right now. I mean, that's a team that could be struggling the next few years, but they're in that Canadian conversation. But I think the biggest thing is the currency exchange. And when the Jets left in what was it, 95 or 96 or so, the Canadian dollar was so much weaker. It was about 60 cents on the dollar to the U.S. dollar. Right now, it's around 1-to-1. And where that comes into play is you think of a Canadian team, you're making your money in Canadian dollars and you're paying out your salaries in American dollars. And so when you're really at that disadvantage, it's tough. You've got to almost make twice as much if you want to compete with your American fellows down in the States. And so I think now it's a great situation for Canadian teams. Will that last again? You know, will we see a weakening of the Canadian dollar? Who knows? And I think that's one of the biggest risks for the NHL is with so much of the value and so much of the money, you know, tied to those three or four teams that you mentioned above the border there, there could be some currency risk to the entire league as far as the money that they can make.
You know, Mike, the article talks about gate receipts and how gate receipts are so important to each team, and particularly how every team gets 100% of their own gate receipts and they're not sharing that with other teams. Do you ever foresee a day where that doesn't happen anymore and the teams are sharing a portion of that amongst themselves?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, not only the gate receipts, I think, are huge for the NHL, and you think of even a playoff situation where teams are keeping all of the revenue. There's no player salaries there, and a lot of teams say that they plan to break even during the season, and they make their money, you know, in the 3, 4, maybe 10 playoff games that you can get if you're really successful and go all the way. So it's certainly a huge factor, and I think it goes back to what I just mentioned as far as diversifying revenues a little bit, so you're not relying so much on one source. And I know that's a big force of John Collins, who came in after the first lockout and really wanted to diversify and get into more national revenue like you see in the NFL or Major League Baseball, and we're seeing so many of the things that they're doing now. I think their stated goal is they want to generate another $1 billion in kind of these national things, whether that's TV deals or the outdoor games, or I think there's going to be a big push towards European events in the next couple years that we really haven't seen yet. They want to make sure that they're getting national money, so it's not up to the individual teams to kind of generate that money, because, you know, we see teams like Pittsburgh, Chicago, Boston, there's not much more they can do locally to generate any more money. They're pretty much maxed out, so it's going to be up to the league growing as a whole to really have the bigger pie continue to grow over the next few years here.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Mike Colligan. He's an analyst for Forbes Sports Money, talking about the new valuations of the NHL franchises. Mike, you mentioned the league needs to grow money on a national basis. A 15-year television deal worth billions and billions of dollars certainly helps matters there. 12 years. I keep screwing that one up. I always think 15. 12 years. The Forbes article was released before the new TV deal was announced, and in it, you projected a value of about $200 million per season or so. We know it's going to be a lot more on a per-year basis. You know, how do you think that affects the value determination for next year and going forward?
Yeah, I don't think it affects necessarily the financials next year, but it certainly affects the value. If you go back to what I said about, you know, the value of a team is the cash flow it can generate in the future. You look at that deal now, and it's, I mean, thinking back, it's probably about $400 million a season for the league as far as that Canadian TV deal goes, and that's huge. That's huge when you divide it up amongst the 30 teams, and maybe you're putting another $7 or $10 million in the pocket of the Florida Panthers. That's big money for them when they operate pretty much on a shoestring budget and really have to count pennies. That's a big deal, and I think to get from maybe that $200 expected level up to $400 or $430 a season, that's a big deal. And I think it's a testament to Gary Bettman, and for all the criticism he takes, and he has, you know, his flaws and the way that he handles his business. But when you look at what he's been able to do and the playbook that's kind of unfolded over the last few years here. If you're an owner in this league, you have to be thrilled with what he's done. He's gotten a long-term deal with NBC. He got the long-term deal with Rogers in place for great money. This was a league that was getting next to no money in the U.S. as far as TV deals just a few years ago. And again, you know, the talk was this lockout would kill the NHL. And when you look at it now, a few months later and kind of look at the big picture, I don't think the league's ever been in a better situation, and I think there's certainly a lot of future growth as well.
Mike, for the first time in a long time, really, there aren't that many franchises that are for sale. And in the article, it talks about how, because money is cheap, that is affecting people's interest in buying teams like Joshua Harris in New Jersey. Can you expand on what that concept means in the article?
Yeah, you know, you're right. A few years ago, there were so many teams available, and I think that was a byproduct of the recession and the financial troubles in general, where owners weren't making as much money in other ventures and maybe had to cash out. Or in the NHL, you know, revenues were down, attendance was down a little bit. They weren't making the same amounts of money. And we saw a lot of teams up for sale, whether it was bankruptcies in Dallas or Phoenix or even New Jersey, who got pretty close there. Mm-hmm. But as far as the cheap money goes, I think, you know, very few owners come in and just pay $300 or $400 or $500 million in cash when they buy a team. You usually have to take on debt. And associated with debt is an interest rate that rises and falls depending on the economy. And right now, those interest rates are very, very low. And I think many are assuming those will continue to rise over the next few years here. So I think it's an opportunity for a lot of people that want to get in and buy a team and have to take on some debt. You want to do it now while those interest rates are low and you know you get your 5 or 10 year debt deal at a really favorable rate. That sets you up pretty well because debt's a scary thing, especially we saw with the Devils. They were a highly leveraged team that was well over 100% debt to value for a while there, and that got Jeffrey Vanderbeek in trouble. When the Devils struggled a little bit and weren't making the same money they did, they were right close to bankruptcy for a while there. So that's going to be a challenge for the Devils as well going forward. They're still highly leveraged, a lot of debt on the books. The new ownership hopefully has some plans to turn things around and generate more money, but debt can be a scary thing, and I think that's what you got to be careful for if you're an owner coming into one of these new teams.
You know, Mike, when I think about NHL owners, I kind of think of it as the opposite of, you know, your friend who's playing poker. Your friend plays poker, he goes out, when he wins, he comes back and tells you that he won all the time. When he loses, you never know that he actually played. Whereas in the NHL, the owners, they tell you when they're losing money all the time, but they don't really tell you when they're making money. In that respect, all these teams generally deny the value of these reports, especially if it's, you know, on the higher end. How accurate do you think they are?
Yeah, that's right. You know, there's two ways I think that you come up with a lot of these numbers. Is you either look at those future cash flows and you add up, you know, what the team going to make in ticket revenue and, mm-hmm. and seat licenses and every other revenue stream that they have, and then you kind of bring that back and create a value off of that. Or you look at just any of these recent purchases, whether it's New Jersey or Phoenix or, you know, another big number was Vancouver that came out in the last few years where their owner went through divorce proceedings mm-hmm. and they had to value the team based on that. And so it's very tough. You can't argue that if a person's willing to value it that and buy a team at a certain price, that's obviously what the team is worth. So there's different ways to come up with those values and probably you don't have two people that would ever agree on what a team is worth and what the value should be. But really, when you look at the big picture, that's the storylines that I think are very, you know, important for a fan of the NHL is seeing how these numbers are rising and how the league's doing well. And right, they go to great lengths in the NHL to keep these financial details private. And even from the players, about a year or two ago, there was an investigation by the NHLPA, I think even during the lockout, that Nashville and Washington were maybe not reporting all the revenue. Mm-hmm. And when the players get a portion of that revenue, they're very interested in making sure that all that detail is in there. And so certainly from that perspective, the owners go pretty far to make sure none of these numbers get out or at least don't go beyond the necessary and only the minimum number of people that need to see it.
We're talking to Mike Colligan of Forbes Sports Money here on TSN 1290, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike, along those same lines, how many teams in the NHL do you think are actually struggling financially?
Yeah, I think 3 or 4 years ago, you could probably say 2/3 of the teams. And I think that was a big problem with the salary cap rising as it did in the last CBA. The salary cap floor was the biggest issue, where you had teams like Florida that were forced to spend, mm-hmm. you know, higher money, higher amounts on player salaries than they probably could support with the revenues they were bringing in. But I think it goes back to how do you define struggling? You know, what's a struggling hockey team? And if we stick with Florida for an example, I mean, they're consistently losing money year over year, and everyone kind of pokes fun at them and says they should be relocating. But when you look at Florida and the entertainment entity that it is, it makes money, mm-hmm. and the Florida Panthers allow them to have a very profitable arena there. They bring in tons of events. They make a ton of money off of that. And so from that perspective, they're actually doing very well. And, you know, losing money has tax benefits for owners that are involved in other businesses. So it's a challenge. I think the toughest thing is going to still be that salary cap. And with all this extra business we're talking about, that cap's going to continue to rise. I mean, we're really going to see that go up pretty quickly, and the floor will go with that. And so, you know, it's no secret that the Tampas, the Floridas, the Phoenixes are not making the local money that they should. And I think that's exactly why the league's pushing for more of this national money, so that you can support and stabilize these franchises and allow them to kind of have additional revenue streams, because it's just too tough to generate the big money that you see in Toronto in a place like Florida or Miami. It's just never going to happen.
Mike, we talked about it a little bit earlier as far as teams. There aren't very many teams, if any, for sale right now, and I think we'd all agree that it doesn't look like there are many candidates to move to Quebec City or Seattle. So having said that, or I guess you could throw Markham in there. So having said that, do you still think that expansion, whether it's to Quebec City, Markham, Vegas, Seattle, do you think that's still a possibility? Is it on the horizon?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's guaranteed, but I think it's very, very likely. I think when you look at, you know, everything that we just talked about and all the things that are in place from a national and local revenue situation, it's almost a no-brainer, and especially the Canadian issue that you talked about. I mean, you think, why is there not another team in Quebec City if we're seeing these financials and the success of even a team like Winnipeg, who's kind of the guinea pig, and people wondered how that would work out. I mean, that's been a resounding success so far financially for the league and for the owners that took over there. So I think Canadian, you know, that's going to be the issue. And I think you've also, again, got that currency risk, is if you throw too many teams into Canada and you're relying on a lot of the Canadian currency to come in and make you a lot of the money, that's a bit of a risk for the league. So I don't know that they'll go all in on Canada, but I think when you're talking about outside Toronto and the money that they're making in that market, certainly enough there to support two teams. Now, will the Maple Leafs allow that happen? I think that'll be the big issue. But then you also look at the expansion fees that I think could be in $400, $500, $600 million that could come in from just one new team. I mean, that's huge money in the pockets of these owners, and I think it's a no-brainer. If they have the opportunity, they're probably going to expand the two teams and get it up to 32. We'll see the balanced conferences, and I think a lot of the owners will be very, very happy with that.
He's a good friend of this program. He's a frequent guest on the show, and he always brings the goods. Mike Colligan from Forbes Sports Money, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on tsn1290.ca.
Big thank you to Mike Colligan of Forbes Sports Money, breaking down that study that they release each and every year. Great insight, as always. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Looks like Chris Kattan, tickets went on sale for Chris Kattan, I believe it was earlier this week. Friday and Saturday shows for Chris Kattan, that would be March 7th and March 8th, already sold out.
Yep, wow. I bought all the tickets.
You bought all the tickets. So if you want to get tickets to see Chris Kattan, March 6th is all that's available. Those are undoubtedly going to go very quickly. Of course, there's great performers between now and then. And I'm reliably informed, another big announcement coming from Rumors Comedy Club this coming week, I believe. So
why isn't Chris Kattan coming to do the commentary with Will Ferrell?
I can't speak to that. We have to discuss that with the Canadian Curling Association.
Well, the reality is Troy Westwood's down at the MTS Center for the Roar of the Rings tailgate party. He's a big enough celebrity for me. Yeah, sure. Ron Burgundy's big, I guess, but you know, I'm a bigger fan of Troy.
I heard last night you had your own Roar of the Onion rings.
That's good. I like that. Well, I was going to say I thought that I heard from a source, Sheldon, that the big announcement at Rumors is going to be the new sandwich, the new Drew Mandel sandwich, quadruple decker.
Not even touching that. You do the show for how many years? You think I've heard it all, and just each week it never seems.
I have to think
me.
Of new things because most of the time you're just tuning me out. So.
That's very true. That's the most honest thing you've said all day on the show. I think.
Can we save the Kane topic for after this? We're not gonna have enough time to flesh it out.
You want to save it for after this?
Yeah. Well, got
okay.
3 minutes here.
It's funny because I'm not even gonna touch that.
Okay, we'll save Evander Kane.
Why don't you
later
explain what we're
show.
Gonna talk about first?
Well, you know, there's a lot of talk. I mean. Bob McKenzie, in case you missed it on Insider Trading earlier this week on TSN on the panel, said that there's just a lot of chatter going on. Teams are calling about Evander Kane, and while he's saying that, you know, the Jets have not, you know, sent out an email saying he's available.
Right.
I tend to believe that when there's this much smoke, and this has been a couple weeks now in a row, probably 3-4 weeks in a row now, where you've heard teams are calling, there's chatter, there's discussions. To me, at some point in time, where there's smoke, there's fire.
And my perspective of this, before we get into the actual crux of the issue, is that Bob McKenzie, for the most part, hasn't been the guy who's been breaking Jets news. That's more so been Darren Dreger.
Right.
So you have to think, I mean, they're both very well connected, obviously, as all our listeners know, but they also have different sources. So whereas Dreger has generally been breaking news regarding the Jets, you'd have to think that Bob McKenzie, who's putting this news out there on Insider Trading, which is obviously every week is kind of what the CBC used to do with the hot stove.
It's must listen.
Yeah, it's must listen. I think he's getting it likely from a different source. So in that situation, you have to think, well, maybe this issue is a little bit bigger. It's expanded. And we know when Bob McKenzie throws something out there, he's not throwing it out there and see if it sticks on the wall. He knows. So
it's not speculation trading. It's insider trading,
That's right.
Which I mean tells me that there's like I said, there's smoke where there's smoke, there tends to be some fire. And in this case, I have to believe it's true. I mean, it would not surprise me in the least bit if Evander Kane was not on the Winnipeg Jets roster at the end of this year.
Well, one thing we know for sure, Drew, sorry to interrupt you. I usually don't interrupt you. I'm actually usually very polite. But
we'll ask the girl Evander at Starbucks Kane, earlier today
has,
about that.
He has one goal in his last 11 games. You can't really count yesterday, guys, because he left the first period after that hit from Coburn. But we know one thing that's not an argument. He's been very bad this year.
Yep.
And he's paid the big bucks. He's the second or third highest paid guy on the team, I think, after Enstrom and Byfuglien. He's paid to score goals and, you know, and somewhere in the 30 to 40 goal range, right? And he's not doing that. And when you're not scoring goals, you have to start asking if, you know, a trade is not imminent, but a possibility because of the fact he's underperforming, right? We've seen, if you can see Matt Molson for Thomas Vanek, you can probably see an Evander Kane for a forward coming back to the Jets.
Second highest played player on the team, only player making more money than him. Making more money than him. Right. Enstrom, 5.75, and Wheeler at 5.6.
He's got to be better, Richie. If he doesn't hit 30 goals this year, that's a disappointing year for him.
I would agree. Worth noting about Evander Kane, obviously he left the game yesterday in the first period. Ken Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun says that Evander Kane may be available for Monday's game. That's according to Claude Noel. So he may be available for Monday. Doesn't sound like it's a terribly serious injury, but we'll talk more about Evander Kane later on in the program. Let's go to break. When we come back, Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN1290, online at TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst. Ray, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. How about yourself?
Oh, good. I'm in Grand Rapids, Michigan, watching my son play this weekend, and so it's always good to watch him play a little bit.
Yeah, we appreciate you giving your time, especially. How's your son doing so far?
Let's see. He broke his foot early in the year, like it seems everybody else in hockey. Blocked a shot, and you know, they used to ask us to block shots. Now it's a requirement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so he missed 3 or 4 weeks, and starting to play better again. And he's in his third year, and they won the Calder Cup last year, and he's doing well. He's just, you're in Detroit system, and it takes a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Ray, obviously, you've seen, I mean, the majority of the teams in the NHL. You call so many games for TSN, and you look at the standings, and we're starting to see some separation between the teams. You know, the wheat is separating from the chaff, as it were. Who is the best team you've seen so far this season?
Oh, I would say St. Louis and Chicago. I would put them, depending on the day, 1 and 1A. I like the fact that Chicago can play. You know, they can play with such high skill, yet they don't play a run-and-gun style. You know, they're pretty diligent the way that they get themselves around the ice. St. Louis is big and strong and deep, and I think they've got the best defense in the NHL. And you know, the question in St. Louis is whether their goaltending will be able to hold up for them. And it's kind of, you know, I'd say Boston and Pittsburgh are the best of the East. And then in the West, there's, you know, St. Louis, Chicago, San Jose, Los Angeles, Anaheim. It's going to be a tough road out of the West this year.
Ray, you know, going through the teams in the NHL, the Detroit Red Wings in the Eastern Conference for the first time this year, the Jets have already defeated the Detroit Red Wings. They've won 3 games in a row here, but they've really struggled. They've only won 4 of their last 10. As you know, they were really struggling at home. What do you think is holding back the Red Wings so far this year?
Oh, a couple of things. I mean, first off, they've been absolutely crushed with injuries up front, and for the most part of this early portion of the season, if Datsyuk or Zetterberg didn't score, no one else did either. They're victims of of having a tough time managing the salary cap a little bit, and they had Gustav Nyquist, who was in the American League, for most of the year until the beginning of last week, and he should be in their top six, but they had no room for him. He was the only guy that could clear waivers, so they kept him in the American League. They finally got him up, and so it was injuries early on. It was a lack of depth scoring that really bit them in a little bit in the middle portion of this first chunk of games. But, you know, Franzen started to play again, and Zetterberg has had a terrific start. Alfredson's had a real good start. Now they're without Datsyuk, and they've kind of hung around. So I don't know that there's anything particularly wrong with them. They're a little bit in transition, perhaps, but from their, you know, an older team to a much younger one, and there's some ups and downs with that. And you know, you guys see with a young team and young players there that there's some nights it looks great, and other nights you kind of smack yourself upside the head and say, gee, is it ever going to get more consistent than this?
You know, Ray, the Sharks are a team that kind of were in transition about a year or two ago. They've really done a nice job of righting the ship, and they're, once again, you know, a dominant regular season team. Moving forward, do you see this team as needing another top four defenseman to really compete with the Chicago St. Louis at the top of the Western Conference?
Well, probably. The problem is, where do you find it? Mm-hmm. And, you know, how do you go out and get it? And, you know, everybody's, you know, about the price of a cup of coffee away from going over the salary cap. So, you know, there's no moves that are going to be made really until the deadline, and or, you know, in those 2 weeks in front of the deadline. They're a really, really good team. And what I liked what they were able to do was last year, it seemed like they were, kind of giving up on the season a little bit. They were, you know, they made some moves, and they moved, you know, they moved Ryan Clough out of their lineup. But what they were able to do was, it was the people they moved out, Clough and Douglas Murray, who weren't very quick, and the guys that they brought in were much more of a speedy type player. And they kind of, and last year it was Tommy Wingles, who did a real good job in their third line. This year they brought Thomas Hertl in there, that 20-year-old rookie, and they moved Brent Burns up to forward last year. Hell, they haven't lost a game this year when Brent Burns is in the lineup. Mm-hmm. They're 11-0-1. Mm-hmm. He got a hat trick last night. They're much quicker, much more dynamic, much more balanced team than they've been in the past. But you're right, they probably do need another solid body on the back end.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst. Ray, you were just talking about speed with the San Jose Sharks, moving a little bit south into California to Los Angeles. We know that the Los Angeles Kings are tough to play against, especially down below the hash marks, but their lack of speed, it seems, may be an issue down the road. Do you think they're good enough to overcome, you know, what their lack in speed?
I do. They've got some young people that have been pushed out of their lineup for a number of reasons. Some of them cap related. Some of them Los Angeles likes to keep their young guys in the American League until they're in the third year of their entry level contract. And the reason you do that is then you don't have any upward pressure salary wise when they negotiate their second contract. And you know, that's an issue that some teams don't seem to get their head around. They get their 18, 19-year-olds in their lineup, and then at 22, you've got to offer them huge money.
Right.
When if you were able to keep them in the American League, they have no negotiation pressure on you in their second contract. So guys like Tyler Toffoli, Lyndon Vay, Tanner Pearson, these guys are all ready to play. They'd all be regulars in most every other NHL market. Yet in Los Angeles, they've had to wait. They've brought these guys in, and the zip they give their lineup is quite unlike what they have already. So, you know, I think there is a subtle transition going on that you might not even really notice till all of a sudden you get halfway down the road of this season, and you go, wow, these young guys are playing a significant role on their team.
Ray, we have to ask you about the Toronto Maple Leafs. We're going to talk about this a little bit later this afternoon, but the Leafs have lost their last two games in overtime, and then they lost to the Sabres last night. Everyone's asking about the Leafs because they've only won three of their last 10 games, and there's all this talk about hockey analytics, which, you know, to be honest with you, sometimes is a little bit it's a little bit overwhelming. Do you think that the Leafs are going to be able to keep up this type of play, or are they doomed to fail because they're giving up so many shots and scoring chances?
Well, if it doesn't change, they're not going to win. I mean, their goaltending was stopping pucks at almost a historic level. Mm-hmm. If you were to extrapolate that over the course of a season, that's not going to continue to happen. And it's already started to slip away from that. Jonathan Bernier lost in Pittsburgh the other night. They lost 6-5 in a game that I did that they didn't have any shots in the third period. I mean, you can go over analytics all you want. Zero shots is no way to play. That can't be successful.
You don't need analytics to figure that one out.
No, I mean, zero is bad. That's as much as my math is. They go into Buffalo and they kind of stumble around a little bit, a game that they, you know, that you would think they would come out and be real good in. Well, the problem is they were okay, but I've been on the side of a rivalry where you're the weaker team. When I was with the Islanders, you know, we always looked at the Rangers like, that was the most important game on our schedule, mm-hmm. and that's how Buffalo looks at Toronto. So they were going to get Buffalo's best last night. So when I look at the Leafs, there's a couple of things I see that have to change if they expect to have a successful season. Number one is they don't move the puck near well enough from their defensemen to their forwards. As a result, they spend extra time in their zone. Mm-hmm. Watch how many times the opposing team will come into their zone, shoot the puck, and before the zone clears, they'll get another chance on net. And then go to the other end and watch how many times the Leafs enter the zone, the shot's taken, it's a save, and then they're out of the zone. They don't spend enough time in the other zone cycling the puck, holding the puck, generating secondary chances, and wearing down teams, and they spend too much time in their zone because they don't move the puck out efficiently enough. Those two things, the numbers will support that. The advanced stats will support that. And when you look at it over the long term, it's not a winning formula.
It's interesting, Ray. You know, in terms of the Jets, you know, we see them on a daily basis, and sometimes I like to take a step back and ask somebody like you who covers the whole league and does see the Jets on occasion, what's your perspective of the team from being a little bit outside?
Well, I would say there's a couple of problems that the Jets have yet to alleviate. And One is finding consistency, not only game to game, but, you know, in game from shift to shift to shift to shift. You're not going to dominate every shift of the game, but you can't have periods of the game where you go dark and you spend way too much time in your zone and you get nothing offensively and you've kind of lost all the momentum that you might have had early. That's the first thing. The second thing, they play far too loosely for me. They seem too willing to trade chances. They don't lock the middle of the ice down well enough that they're able to limit the number of chances that come against. Some of that is inexperience and youth and injury to their lineup. You know, they're asking a lot from a very few players. The depth of their lineup hasn't been fantastic. Now their third line started to give them some real good minutes. You know, there's some growth to Scheifele, and mm-hmm. I think Matt Halischuk's a decent player for them. When I say a decent player, I mean he's not a top six guy, but I think he can be an effective bottom six player. So if you start to get play out of that third line and that top line for you can have some consistency, then the real question is, will your second line give you enough solid minutes? And they don't seem to get all three of those lines going enough on the same night to be consistent.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're talking to Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst. Ray, obviously, you know, this year especially, the Olympics are never too far away from everybody's front of mind. And, you know, February is rapidly approaching, and we know that the deadline for naming the Team Canada roster got extended by a week until January the 7th. We're going to debate this on the program a little bit later. We want to get your opinion. Do you think Team Canada is going to will take mini combinations, a guy like Crosby and Kunitz, over a straight talent selection? You know, Kunitz, say, over a more talented player who may not fit with Sidney Crosby as well.
Well, it's paramount they have somebody to play on the roster that is comfortable playing with Crosby, and that certainly plays into Chris Kunitz's hands. I happen to be a big Chris Kunitz fan. I think he's much better than people around the league give him credit for. Lots of people from the outside look at him like he's this guy that just gets to play with Crosby, and that's why he gets lots of points. He'd be the first to tell you, man, what a treat, and he is the beneficiary of playing with Crosby, but Kunitz can play the game. He wouldn't be a pick like Rob Zomner was in 1998 that you'd look and go, what is he doing on the team?
Right.
I mean, Kunitz wouldn't be that pick to me. I think he's played himself on the inside of the bubble, A, because of his chemistry with Crosby, but B, he's been better than a lot of the so-called talent guys. And he's been better than Eric Staal.
Yeah.
If you were gonna pick one of the two of them, he's been better than Staal this year. He's been better than Claude Giroux this year. These are guys that you would say would be on the inside of the bubble. I think if I'm picking the team today, Kunitz is on it.
Ray, sticking with the Canadian team for the 2014 Sochi Winter Olympics, as far as the goaltenders go, I guess a two-part question. Right now, as it stands, who do you think starts for Team Canada, and who are the three goalies that you would pick?
Well, unless the wheels completely fall off, it's Luongo and Price for sure. And the third guy would be up for some debate. Lots of people think Mike Smith has an inside track because of his play, one, but two, because of Sean Burke, who's doing a lot of the evaluation for Team Canada, for Hockey Canada and their goaltending. He has great knowledge of Mike Smith. Corey Crawford would be in that mix as well. I think it's either Smith or Crawford as the third guy. The starter, well, I would say it's probably Luongo. But their first three games, I would suspect you'd get a 1-1 split for Price and Luongo, and then the third game you'd probably get a sense of who they think the real starter is. Now they'd want to watch both of them on the big ice. There is, as much as we talk about which players you're going to take on the big ice, some goaltenders are better suited to play on the big ice than others. When I played in the World Championships in 96, our two goalies were Curtis Joseph and Marty Brodeur. I mean, how's that for a goalie tandem? Well,
yeah.
Marty had all kinds of problems for whatever reason on the big ice, and he ended up as the backup, and Curtis Joseph played. And I would have never guessed that, that Marty would struggle when he was over there, but that year, at that time, he did. I mean, maybe you get over there and Luongo's great or not great, or Price is great or not great, and then you can go to the other guy. I don't think there's one that would be way clear-cut, but they both had excellent starts to their seasons.
That leads into the last question, Ray, and you kind of really led into it. You've played in the World Championships a few times, and you talk about the adjustment for goaltenders. What about strategically? You know, you see a lot in the NHL, defenseman to defenseman pass, up to the winger, tip it in, forecheck. With the goalie being able to play the puck now and with more room out there, how do you think something like that or any other strategic thing will affect, you know, teams that are used to playing, players that are used to playing on the small surface?
Well, I would say there's a couple of real differences. One is you have to be able to carry the puck. You have to physically be able to carry the puck more on the big ice than on the small ice, where that, as you mentioned, a lot of the small ice is quick up from the D to the forward, tip it in, go chase it. That way, in that scenario, nobody carries the puck. Mm-hmm. But on the big ice, there's so much room side to side. You can move it, you can carry it, you can handle the puck, and the guys are going to have to be able to do that. Secondly, it's not so much whether a guy can fly out all over the place. It's his ability to play inside the dots, because the ice from the dots to the boards is almost becomes dead ice. Mm-hmm. There's less board play, so the guys that are going to be on your roster, they have to be able to skate, but they have to be quick. So you can, you know, there's guys, as you know, they're fast guys, and then there's different guys, right, who are just quick guys.
Right. Yeah.
And I think you have to have quick players. So a guy, they might be concerned a little bit about his speed, maybe a Corey Perry or a Ryan Getzlaff. If they feel that they can slash through holes quick enough, then they're going to be just fine over there.
He's TSN's hockey analyst, Ray Ferraro. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You guys have a great weekend.
You too, Ray. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Ray.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Big thanks to Ray Ferraro for having just joined us to talk really about the NHL in general. And I believe we have James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen on the line, so let's go to the hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show James Gordon from the Ottawa Citizen. James, we know it's a very busy day for you this afternoon. If you need to run to get to the Daniel Alfredson scrum, just let us know and we'll let you go.
Yeah, no problem.
Obviously, we want to bring you on to talk about Alfie's return to Ottawa. You know, the big night is tomorrow, a game nationally available on TSN television. And, you know, do you expect the response from the crowd to be a warm one for his years of service or a negative one for him leaving and going to Detroit?
Well, I mean, I'd be surprised if it wasn't sort of overwhelmingly positive, but I've been surprised before. I think a lot of people here, you know, don't hold a whole lot of animosity against Daniel Alfredson anymore. Basically, since he came out after it had been announced that he was signing in Detroit and did his press conference here and explained how sort of all the contract negotiations went down here and why he kind of soured on signing here and wanted to try something new. So I think if people looked at it objectively, you know, there was enough blame to go around on both sides for it coming to this. But, you know, I don't know that there's a whole lot of kind of latent anger here at Daniel Alfredson. I mean, you're always going to get sort of that group of people who, you know, absolutely hate him for leaving after all this time and being kind of held up as a hero in the city here. But, you know, for the most part, I think that people will welcome him back very warmly. If he doesn't get a standing ovation, I'll be really surprised. The Senators came around and said that they'll honor him and do a pregame video here in the rink. So, I think it'll be a good experience for everybody. I mean, I know that, you know, Paul McLean spoke this morning and said that, you know, the Senators have moved on and Alfredson has moved on, and this is kind of a chance for the fans here to get some closure, because obviously the two teams have played each other a couple times this season. So, and I think he's right. I think this is a good thing for kind of the city to, you know, thank him for his time here, but also kind of move on with their team.
You know, James, obviously, when he left, there's, you mentioned blame to go around, and it was Brian Murray. It seemed like kind of it fell on the shoulders of Eugene Melnyk. I'm not in Ottawa. We're not in Ottawa. Is he around, and is he making himself present this weekend, or is it kind of something that he's taking a step back and not really getting associated with this weekend?
He did a radio interview earlier this week where, you know, he kind of softened a bit on, I guess, some of the language just in terms of how it all went down and you know. I mean, I think clearly he was, angry to lose that kind of iconic player, and some of that anger was, you know, directed at Alfredson and his agent. But he seemed, a little more conciliatory this week, and obviously it's his team, and his team is acknowledging Alfredson for his contribution here. So, I think there's a bit of, not to sound too sappy, but there's a bit of healing going on here between Alfredson and the team, and the players aren't mad at him. They were very close with him and understood why he wanted to leave, and it's something where I think, it's kind of helping everybody move on, including the owner.
James, Daniel Alfredson was the leader of the Ottawa Senators for so many years. We know that Jason Spezza now wears the C on his sweater. Has it just been him who has filled the leadership void? Have there been other players, and how do you think he's done in filling that leadership void?
Everybody can talk about, what is told to them, but unless you're in the room, you don't really get a sense of how that's going and how that works. I mean, Jason Spezza today said he's more of a vocal leader than Alfredson was. Alfredson was more of a strong, silent type that kind of led by example, and Spezza says he's a bit more vocal, and he has a couple of veterans here in Chris Phillips and Chris Neal, who are serving as alternates. So, I think it's funny to try and sort out what exactly the players feel about it, because, on the one hand, they say, obviously there is a big void, losing a player of that caliber and a leader of that caliber, but then they turn around on the next hand and say, but we've moved on and we're happy with the group here. So I think if you read between the lines a little bit, the kind of the shock and the sadness from some players, a guy like Kyle Turris, who said that Alfredson had a bigger influence on his career than anyone else, and obviously Turris has become a pretty great player here since coming over here from Phoenix. So I think that the jury's still out on Spezza's leadership. You want to judge something after 20-some games, but I think it would kind of be foolish to believe that losing Alfredson is not going to affect the kind of the leadership tone with the team.
James, you look at this team, 24 points in 26 games. Obviously been a big disappointment, especially after last year and the success without many of those star players. Do you see Paul McLean, he's not the most rah-rah type, but do you see Paul McLean trying to have this game galvanize the team moving forward?
Well, I think he's on quite a few occasions has been hoping that a game would galvanize the team. I mean, they've already played these guys twice, and they got wins, and they're sometimes winning these games where you might not expect them to win, like on the road in Detroit, and then they kind of come up with these lousy efforts here against, the Columbus's of the world. So, I think clearly he was starting to get upset after the last game when they lost to Vancouver, he kind of set his own timeline here earlier this season and said, look, if you get to 30 games, you pretty much are what you are.
Yeah.
And what they are at this point is an inconsistent team. And, that's out of his own mouth. So, they have four games here to show that they're better than what we've seen. And then I guess we'll ask the coach again what he thinks, because, people sort of tend to laugh when you talk about a team's chances of making the playoffs this early in the season. But it's so hard to make up points in this league. And if you're in a bad shape before Christmas, then you are actually in quite a bit of trouble. So I think Paul McLean probably feels that urgency now, and he needs his team to be a lot better than they've been if they do want to make the playoffs this year.
James, we'll let you go on this last question. It's sort of along the similar lines. You know, do you expect Senators General Manager Brian Murray to be aggressive in trying to salvage this season if the team continues to struggle? Or do you think that he will continue to dance with the team he brought to the ball in the first place?
Well, you know, it depends on how, I guess, the next month or two go. I think someone on Twitter said that, that they started their fire sale a few years ago when they were about 17 points out of the playoffs. So they're still a ways away from that. So, and they still do have time to make up ground. It's going to be difficult, and they need to go on a run. But, you know, it'll really depend. I mean, if they're out, then, you know, they should probably do something. I mean, they don't even have a first-round pick this year. So it's not a good position to be in to have a bad season and not have any assets to take advantage of as a result of that.
James Gordon from the Ottawa Citizen, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And enjoy chatting with Danny Alfredson. I'm sure you guys will have something to talk about.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, James. Take care. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.